Take the bass line out. Uh-huh. Here go.
Let it bump, though. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Hardwood Knox Podcast. I am Dan Vivalli, coming at you this time with my super-duper, incredibly awesome times awesome, fantastic, spectacular co-host, Andy Bailey. I hope everyone had a Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays with whatever they were celebrating throughout the month of December. I hope you guys are getting set for a new year. 2018 is right around the corner. This week has been all kinds of messed up because of the holiday and Andy and I being so busy. This will be the only podcast this week, but luckily it's going to be an exciting podcast because we have a monster mailbag for everyone that we're going to try and get through. First and foremost, though, I would like to, one, thank everyone again for continuing to listen and following along, but two, please remember to subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes as always. We're really trying to get closer to that century mark on the ratings. We are not really all that close, but we're more than halfway there. We're at like 60 right now, and so if you could take the 10 to 15 seconds of your time and just throw a rating in there and a subscription so that you can make sure you're hearing us speak every time we drop a podcast. And if you want to leave a review, please do leave a review as well. We appreciate every single person who has done that for us to this point, and once again encourage everyone else to follow suit. With that out of the way, though, it is time for the question everyone waits for each and every podcast. How are you doing today, Andy?
I'm excellent. Still basking in the glow of Christmas, but I am more than ready to jump into this mailbag. How was your Christmas?
It was good. I watched a lot of hoops on Christmas, so I didn't really spend it with the family.
Same here.
But Christmas Eve was big. I ate like two whole cheesecakes on my own. That was like off my diet night. It was pretty fantastic.
I commend you. That is a worthwhile achievement for sure.
Yeah, well, I binge when I go off my diet. I don't know about you. Did you binge on anything fun?
I haven't been on a diet in probably like 2 years. So it's been a constant binge for about that long.
A 730-day binge.
Yeah. And I'm like telling myself January 1st, I'm going to start working out and exercising again for the first time in a couple years. We'll see how long that lasts. But
we'll follow
wish me
along
luck.
As you go after your first 10-day contract.
Yeah. Yeah, like you said, it is a monster mailbag. I think this is the most engagement we've had on a mailbag so far. So this should be fun. And I'm just going to jump right into the questions. We have Thomas Duffy at TJD Hoops. He is an editor for Bicycle. And he asks us, how long before Jimmer, the Mormon Megalodon, Fredette comes back? And I don't know if that's his official nickname, but I dig it. I've got an image pulled up here on Google. The minimum feet of a Megalodon, which is a huge shark, is twice as long as a great white. So I'm cool with the nickname. I don't know. Do you think Jimmer Fredette will ever come back?
I mean, hey, Gerald Green is back in the NBA. He's on the Rockets. Anything could happen. I mean, maybe he pops up. Like, I don't even know. Would he pop up in the D League or Summer League team at this point, or is it just straight overseas for him now? I always was a believer that his shooting could find a place in the NBA, his shooting and scoring and even a little bit of his playmaking. Here. But I guess at this point, like, how many years has it been? It's been closer to a decade now.
Two. Oh, since he was drafted.
Yeah, since he was drafted.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, 2012, that's a long... Oh, no, wait. No,
he is... He was I think they call him the Lonely God in China. He's got his own shoe deal. So I'm sure he's loving it over there. The only thing I looked up in response to this question is, and I've done this a couple times, J.R. Smith's numbers in China.
Oh, God.
34.4 points, 7.4 rebounds, 4.2 assists, 2.5 steals. 49.7 field goals, 46.2 threes, 75.8 free throws. Jimmer Fredette's numbers in China this season, 37.5 points, 7 rebounds, 4.6 assists, 2.1 steals, 44 field goal, 44 three, 96 free throw. So it's basically the same. And I'm with you. I think there could be a place for him if he wound up in the right situation. But like you said, I don't know if that opportunity is going to present itself again.
Yeah, I don't know.
I wish it would.
Take. Yeah, I mean, we're talking about this would have been his seventh season. He was drafted in 2011. It's just at some point, you know, now he's going to be 29 in February. My guess would be
And every once in a while, a random guy will, like, come over from overseas. Like, this is a much different player, but Teodosic came over late, and Gary Neal came over late. There are some examples, but
I think it was, I mean, remember when he signed with the Spurs in 2015 for a minute? Like, that was the great Jimmer hope, and then it was not.
Yeah, I did too. All right, this one's from Adam Cubbage, at D-A Cubbage, C-U-B-B-A-G-E. If Jabari Parker comes back and plays like he did before his injury, the Bucks' ceiling in the playoffs is blank. I'll leave it to you.
It depends on how their matchups fall in the playoffs, because if Jabari Parker comes back and he's that 20 points per game scorer from last year and he's hitting threes off the catch and he's kind of mobile on the defensive end too, the Bucks are going to be good, but you can't get through the Cavaliers still. Would you even give them like a 25% chance against Cleveland in a series at that point? So Eastern Conference Finals, I think, is a fair ceiling, but if you have to meet the Cavaliers before then, you're ostensibly not going to get there. The one thing I guess would be kind of interesting to see, though, is if you could run out like a Middleton, Giannis, Bledsoe, like I guess Snell lineup, and you put like Jabari Parker at the five for that, because that foursome,
I think that's interesting too.
That foursome is posting an offensive rating of 117.6, defensive rating of 102.8. So they are outscoring opponents by 14.8 points per 100 possessions, and the Bucks are 10-5 in the 15 games that they've appeared in. You
make Giannis like the rim protector, kind of how Kevin Durant is with the Warriors.
Right. So, I mean, and so Parker's still, I guess, your de facto four in that situation. And you just have so many guys. You four of those guys can create with the ball in their hands on the offensive end. Parker, Middleton, Antetokounmpo, Bledsoe.
And Snell has become like a deadly catch and shoot option.
Yeah, he's like the perfect complementary like 3-and-D-er. Like he'll work on the defensive end even though he's not spectacular. So that would be like an interesting lineup. And then you still have Brogdon, John Henson on the bench. All of a sudden, it just feels like you're a lot deeper. Maybe if they get Sean Kilpatrick going ever, I really liked that pickup by them. Even though people were kind of mad with how they used Gary Payton this season, which I kind of agree when you looked at the contract situation. But anyway. But Parker would certainly elevate their ceiling, but I don't know. I could still see their ceiling being the Eastern Conference Finals right now. Parker makes it more likely they get there. I don't think he makes it much more likely that they'll have the requisite firepower to get past Cleveland.
Yeah, my answer is pretty much the same. I was thinking when I read it that as long as they're not on the same side of the bracket as Cleveland, then they can make the Eastern Conference Finals with that team. I think the East... hopefully this isn't like too disrespectful to the Celtics, but in the last couple of weeks, it started to feel to me again like it's Cleveland and everyone else. And I think Milwaukee is firmly in that everyone else camp, especially if Parker's healthy. But like you said, I don't think, especially once Cleveland gets Isaiah Thomas back, I don't think it's enough to keep up with them. They have been so good basically since Derrick Rose went down. You know, they still have their issues defensively, but LeBron is doing things he's never done before, which is insane to say in year 15. Kevin Love has really come on in the last like month or so. They're very much starting to click too. And it's Dwayne Wade, Kyle Korver led bench unit is insanely good.
Even Chetty Osmond's developed like a nice rapport with the bench and
yeah, all of a sudden he's like getting minutes and deserving them. So it's really tough to see anybody beating them at this point. Okay, next we have Audio B. Royster at AdioBroyster. So the Thunder have won 6 in a row and are 12-3 in the month of December. Is it possible Billy Donovan has figured this thing out? And he has a follow-up. Should Houston start worrying?
I think it's certain. I mean, some of this is a matter of, like, hey, guys are playing a little bit better. Russell Westbrook's finally shooting. He's shooting.
That's kind of my thought.
He's shooting 43.3% over the last 15 games, which is, again, it's not spectacular, but that's better for Russ. He's getting to the foul line a bunch, 7.7 free throw attempts per game. I don't know. It also helps, I would think, that Carmelo Anthony's attempting under 15 shots per game over this 15-game stretch. He's not shooting well, 40.2%, slashing 33.3% from beyond the arc. Even his free throw attempts have been bad. He doesn't get many of them, but he's at under 67% during this stretch, but their defense is still really good. Patrick Patterson has improved a little bit during this time as well. He's shooting almost 39% from three. It's just they're getting these better performances. Even Paul George, he's still not shooting particularly well from the field, but he's at 47.1% from three over these 15 games, and he's shooting almost 7 3-point attempts per game.
I was just going to say the same thing. So go ahead.
It just seems the stuff is coming together, and I would like their offense to – it finally feels like they're capitalizing on the amount of talent that they have, but I would like to see some more creative stuff from their offense. I get that Carmelo Anthony is going to have to assume a lower volume role moving forward, and it appears to be working now, but again, it's not like Oklahoma City. I think during this time, what have they been on the offensive end? They are 12th in offensive efficiency, which is good. It's not great. Can you get, you know, Melo setting some more screens off the ball, maybe even experimenting with him as a pick-and-roll diver? Can you do the same even with George and Westbrook? Like, get them to set more screens when they're off the ball, or can you get these guys to make more cuts just to throw some extra layers of creativity in there? That's when I think they'll be at their most dangerous, but the fact that it looks like they're a little bit more balanced now because guys are making shots and the defense hasn't totally suffered as a result of what they're kind of favoring offensively, I don't know that we can say the Rockets should start to worry. That was certainly an impressive, like, Christmas victory, but I think it's possible that the Thunder, and we've talked about this, like, the Paul George trade scenarios are always fun, but I definitely think it's possible that the Thunder are still going to comfortably have home court advantage in the first round of the playoffs.
Yeah, they look really good in December. I looked up their numbers pre-December and since December started, thinking that, well, maybe Westbrook's shot attempts will be down, maybe George's will be up a little bit, maybe Anthony's will be down. And I did not get what I was expecting. Like you said, Westbrook's field goal percentage is up a bit. It's up about 3% in December. But his field goal attempts are also up almost four, taking almost four shots a game during this improved stretch. George and Anthony are both taking about two fewer shots per game. So maybe the answer is just more hero ball from Westbrook, just somehow he does it more efficiently. I don't know. The one thing that I can point to here that, I mean, I'm grasping at straws, but Steven Adams is taking almost two more shots per game, and in December he's shooting almost 70% from the field. So maybe you take a couple inefficient mid-range jumpers from Melo and give them to Steven Adams at the bucket, and suddenly you're scoring a point or two more per game. Is that enough of a difference to go from what they were to what they are? You know, maybe in combination with what Westbrook's doing, but I think overall it's just everybody playing slightly better and just kind of figuring each other out that's making them a better team right now.
Yeah, and I mean, their like preferred starting lineup has been absurd over this 15-game stretch. Nine appearances, plus 23.9 points per 100 possessions. The other thing that we've kind of seen them do, and this was just, I suppose, a matter of getting everybody healthy, but we're finally getting to see that lineup everyone thought was going to be able to stack up against Golden State or Houston, where you sub out Steven Adams for Patrick Patterson at the five. And they've been used in six games over the last 15, only 18 minutes, but plus 19.5 points per 100 possessions with a top-notch defensive rating and probably close to league average, slightly below offensive rating. It looks like this team can do some different things. I question whether Carmelo Anthony is going to buy into his current role all season. If they're winning, you know, that it's pretty easy to do. And their past two wins have been really good. They weren't exactly taking down these world beaters beforehand, but to win against Houston and then to beat up on a Toronto team on that second night of a back-to-back. And even, you know, the Jazz are kind of up and down this season, but that win right before Christmas over Utah, like, those are good quality wins from them.
And so, all, like, fairly comfortable, too.
Right. So it's just I still think they're going to be a really good team. I just still feel like they have a ways to go on the offensive end.
Yeah, I would agree with that. All right, I'm going to move on to at Joshua F. Beal, B-E-A-L. He asks, would you take Jason Tatum over Spida, who is Donovan Mitchell?
I think you should start on this one.
All right, I'll take it. This... I'm torn on this question. I think what Donovan Mitchell is doing right now is slightly more impressive because he just has so much more responsibility on his shoulders offensively. Utah just looks their offense grinds to a halt if he's not doing things, which is, that's just so much to ask of a rookie. When he's not in the game, it's like, it's almost painful to watch them play offense. So he's got a lot on his shoulders there, and he's still averaging almost 18 points a game. He's shooting much better than I would have guessed coming into the season. I think the argument for Tatum, while he does have a lot more help offensively on Boston, he is 2 or 3 years younger than Mitchell, and he's a good 5 inches taller. And I think if you're just evaluating a prospect, I think age and height is pretty important in this discussion. So I think what Mitchell is doing at the moment is more impressive. If I had to pick one to sort of build a team around going forward, I think I'm going to take Tatum.
That's probably a good way to put it. I like the fact
but
that
I'm torn. I mean, I could go either way.
I mean,
go ahead.
I like the fact that Donovan Mitchell has been so much more self-sufficient, and that's not to say that Tatum can't be. It's just he's not in that situation, and he's not, you know, almost 35% of his shots are coming unassisted, of his made buckets, or excuse me, are coming unassisted. Like, that's a...
I didn't know that. That's impressive.
Yeah, so it's, I mean, Donovan Mitchell, almost 38% of his shots are only coming off assists, so he's more responsible for the offense. There's also something to me that's more intriguing about a guy who's going to have just inherently a larger control over the offense, because now he's tasked with facilitating. It looks like he's going to be basically a point guard moving forward, or really heavily...
He should be already.
Yeah, combo guard. I like what Mitchell can do on the defensive end, but Tatum's been pretty good defensively as well, and he can defend fours and threes, and he's just that like-sized wing at 6'8". I'd probably want him more moving forward as well, but it's tough just because of what Donovan Mitchell's able to just do in a higher volume role already, and it makes you wonder, hey, if Tatum wasn't playing alongside, you know, Kyrie Irving and Al Horford, and even just a little bit like Jaylen Brown helps him with the defensive assignments that they need to handle. You know, almost 20% of Tatum's total shot attempts have been wide open threes. Like, that's incredible. Yeah. So his job is certainly easier, but I'm with you. Long term, just with the way the league is trending toward these like-sized wings, I'd probably still want him.
I will add one more thing for Donovan Mitchell. His, like, flashes have been a little bit brighter, and I think that is worth considering when you're comparing two young guys.
It's also, though,
it's like the flashes that he's shown have been, like, the 40-point game, that was crazy to see a rookie take over like that. And I don't think we've seen quite that level of flash from Jason Tatum. I'm still probably going to take Tatum, but I think you can make an argument for Mitchell.
I think you can too, and like that's the other thing about him is, yes, there are all these like ill-advised pull-ups, like you take those when you look at his role. Like, Tatum just isn't asked to be doing that. Like, he's going to get higher quality shots in transition with Boston than Mitchell's going to get with Utah. So it's it's tough to pick. And I will Tatum ever become like a really good passer? I mean, like, that's something that's up for debate as well, or will he ever get the opportunity to carry an offense on his own? Because it hasn't been pretty this year. He's played 208 minutes without Al Horford and Kyrie Irving on the floor, and the Celtics' defense has been fine. They're a net plus during this time, but they're posting a 93.2 offensive rating. And again, he's a rookie, but you look at what Donovan Mitchell does for the Jazz in, you could pretty much call it a similar situation, because they don't have, you know, Irving's not there. Rudy Gobert is injured right now, and you look at the offensive splits in there, mostly just night and day when he's off the floor. So there is a case to be made for him. Just still, if we're going to fast forward 3 years down the line, I think I'm going to want Tatum, but it is very, 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 very close.
Yeah, that's a good question by Joshua. Our next one is from at Boxing Contreras, Contreras. He just says Tim Duncan is the best, then jumps down a couple lines and puts a question mark. So I'll let you interpret that however you want.
I'm assuming he wants to say, is he the best power forward of all time or the best center of all time? And it's just iffy territory, because Tim Duncan is a center. And, you know, I looked at Cleaning the Glass before we went on, and not since 2004, 2005 have a majority of Tim Duncan's minutes come at the power forward position. So it's just like, excuse me, not since 2003, 2004. And when you look at Basketball Reference, 72% of his career minutes, according to them, have come at center. It was basically like once that David Robinson era was over, as you said before the podcast, he moved to center. And, you know, is he the best center of all time?
I don't think so. No. I think you can make an argument for him at power forward. At center, you've got Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. I think you could at least me personally, I'd probably take Shaq in front of him.
You've Shaq. There's also Bill Russell's and Will Chamberlain are going to factor into yeah. those discussions. He is without question a top five center all time, and I would probably just take him, and then maybe this is just recency bias, but I'd probably take him over Chamberlain and Bill Russell too.
Like would too.
He would be a top three center for me. So he's
here's another way to look at this. Do you think he's the best player of that era, like the early 2000s? There's been a debate between him and Kobe, and no, I think LeBron is obviously in there too. Well, I'm saying I'm with you. People have debated that. I think he's the best player of that era.
Right. So that's, you know, and we kind of talked about this too. Part of the reason I think people cling to the power forward argument is probably just one, because we have like the older school purists. I'm not even trying to insult them. Like, they're still going to like talk about those days when he played next to David Robinson and that's how he like began his career and everything. Yeah. And two, it's just easier to argue that he's the best power forward of all time than it is to figure out his place in that pantheon of centers.
I agree. So I'm going to go top five center as well, and I'll say he was the best player of the like 2000 to 2010. I think it's obviously LeBron from that point to
now. I'll say that too, and I'll probably go top three center, but that could be my recency kicking in because I'm 20, going on 29, so I did not
watch
Bill Russell play.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't think you can compare guys like Russell and Wilt to this current crop of players. Now, there was like nine teams in the NBA, literally right. nine teams when Bill Russell won all those championships. So, okay, what would an NBA team in Wyoming be called? That's from @5KL, who obviously knows I'm from Wyoming and in Wyoming. there was a – somebody tried to like kickstart the CBA again. I don't even remember what they called it, but there was like a minor league, supposedly professional team here called the Wyoming Wranglers. And like some of the guys on there were people I played pickup with who are just terrible. so Wranglers is out. I think Wyoming Wind, cause it's super windy. It has a little alliteration, but it's also extremely corny.
The Wyoming so I am just Whirlwinds gonna, might be fun.
Ooh, that's not bad. I'm going to default to the mascot from my elementary school, the Buffaloes.
What about the Bison, the Wyoming Bison?
Bison would work, too. I actually thought of that.
What about the state bird, the Wyoming Western Meadowlarks?
I'm glad you had that pulled up because I was like, this is embarrassing.
Or they could. I mean, they have so many national parks and forests and state parks and everything.
I know the national flower. Indian paintbrush. But yeah, like you could work in like one of the national parks. That's a good idea.
State reptile, the Washington horned toads.
We have a state reptile?
The state reptile, and I said Washington, I meant Wyoming. The Wyoming horned toads. That would be a hell of an, I'm for the horned toads. That's like the, and then you can like, does it can get I, weird? Do you call them?
I've
like,
literally never seen a toad in Wyoming anywhere.
Not a horned toad, and not a horny toad, a horned toad. Let's make that clear.
Man, I'm so confused. Toads. Okay, I'm in.
State tree. You guys are the cottonwoods.
I'm seeing pictures of a Wyoming horned toad now. There's definitely no chance I've seen one of these things.
Are they intimidating looking? I feel like I'm going to
They are kind of scary, actually.
I'm going to go with horned toads. And the whirlwind or wind like that you know that they do look kind of scary. My vote is officially the Wyoming horned toads.
All right, you
What's
sold
yours?
Me. I'm going with that. I'm buying.
Would you like another fun fact?
Yes.
The horned toads, or the horned toad, have also been known as the horny toad, historically.
Yeah, there you go. Either one works for me. Another Tatum question. This one's from @PashaSabet. PashaSabet. And I apologize if I butchered that pronunciation. Would Tatum be producing at this kind of efficiency on a bad team?
I think we kind of answered that question with his minutes, sans Irving and Horford.
Yeah, I don't think I don't think it'd be this level. I actually this morning, gave myself a big project and I averaged the ranks of basically everyone who's played 400 minutes through in seven catch-alls, and he came out as the 30th best player in the NBA right now, which is wild. I never would have guessed that. I don't think he would be near that level of efficiency. At the same time, he has proved to be better than I thought he would be in this rookie season. So I still think he'd be very, very good on a bad team, just not this level.
Okay, so we might need to retract our statements to some extent, because the numbers I said, the Celtics is a team when he plays without Horford and Irving, they're just absolutely – the offense is terrible. The team is shooting under 22% from three. But listen to this. In per 36 minutes, when Jason Tatum plays with Kyrie Irving and Al Horford, he is averaging 15.6 points, 6.3 rebounds, 1.8 assists, 1.8 turnovers, and slashing 54.6 shooting, 51.6% three-point shooting, 84.7% from the foul line. Without them.
Okay.
For 36 minutes, 19.2 points, 7.1 rebounds, basically identical on the assists, 1.7, 1.4 turnovers, and he's shooting 48.1% from the field and 52.4% from three. And his free throw percentage dips to 76%, but he's getting to the line five attempts per 36 minutes as opposed to 3.8 with those two. So maybe we're under
– That's crazy.
But okay, and I don't want to make this like cheapo comparison – that could also have like a little bit of a super rich man's Harrison Barnes vibe to it. This guy's going to put up numbers no matter where he is, but how much of a profound impact will they have on the team when he's a lone wolf? Like if you go from making Jason Tatum the number three or number four option to the number one, the party changes a great deal.
So and there's also a question about like who he's putting those numbers up against. If Horford and Irving are out, there's a good chance the other team starters are out too.
That's also a fantastic point. I'm actually going to look that up right now to see what his most used lineup is without them. And I mean, that's still like, you know, it's still
impressive. It's better than I would have guessed.
Yeah. So I'm wrong. I mean, he's played a great deal without Kyrie Irving. So like, that's kind of a plus. I'm having to go very far down this list though, to find a lineup that doesn't include either. And his most used lineup without the two of them, includes Semi Ojeleye, Terry Rozier, Marcus Smart, and Daniel Theis. They've logged a whopping 10 minutes together in three games, and they have a negative 66.2 net rating. So
he definitely has to do a lot with that lineup. But the fact that he's efficiently doing it is still really impressive.
But that kind of buttresses our like this question, like I guess it's a fair question, and then it buttresses the argument for him against Donovan Mitchell is maybe he could do more. I do wonder if he could ever be like a more of a volume like playmaker and passer type deal. But maybe like can he?
There's
run
still
like
time
forward?
For that too.
I mean, he's super young.
Yeah. Okay. This next one, somebody was actually following up that question, and he said, "I like this is Cam J. Chappelle." CamJChappell. I like this kind of question. Who would you call the biggest beneficiary of their system/surroundings as far as good players go? My bias wants to say people like Green or Carmelo, but I'm probably just bitter and don't want to accept that Draymond is as good as he actually is. Well, I appreciate the honesty, Cam.
I also I appreciate how high he is on Carmelo Anthony right now.
Yeah, that too. I don't know. I don't know how much of a believer I am in system players. Generally, I feel like your talent kind of travels wherever you go. I think there are some guys that are probably elevated by where they are. I don't know if there's anybody that like jumps off the page for me right now. It's like that's a system player. I don't know. Does anybody come to mind for you?
I feel like I'm going to get a lot of hate for this, but if we're talking about in terms of like high profile guys, hasn't it kind of been proven that DeAndre Jordan is that guy?
Ooh, that's interesting.
Like you kind of look at,
he has not been as impactful without Chris Paul. That's true.
And like he's needed Teodosic on the court to like really feel it, like to really make an impact offensively. And then the Clippers defense just hasn't been, it got better lately, but it just hasn't been, you know, when he doesn't have like a Beverly or a Chris Paul there. He's not facing as many shots at the rim because he's having to recover. That's just me. I mean, offensively, I think there'd be a case there. If we're just talking high-profile players, stars, borderline stars, whatever you want to say, he'd be the one that springs to mind to me more so than Draymond Green. If you wanted to talk specifically about Draymond Green's assist totals being a product of Golden State's system, because it's
that's a good point.
Because so many of them, like, he's just sprinting down the lane and he just throws it to someone in the corner, or like they're just these open cutters.
He's surrounded by like three of the greatest shooters of all time.
Right, but like his rebounding and his defensive switchability, like that's not a product of the the Warriors. So
Maybe getting some hate, when you said DeAndre Jordan, it kind of made me think of Rudy Gobert too, who hasn't been nearly as impactful this season without Hayward and George Hill.
Hasn't the defense still been like really good with him on the floor though?
He's been great defensively. I think that has a lot to do with his health, that it hasn't been quite as impactful as last season. But he just hasn't been as good offensively. I mean, he can't catch Ricky Rubio's passes. That's a big problem.
Well, Ricky Rubio throws the dumbest passes.
And speaking of Ricky Rubio, maybe he's a system guy too. Now I'm going.
Well, there is a
question.
Yeah, let me throw this question out there to you, since you're the only one who I feel like should be answering this. Why does Ricky Rubio play minutes for an NBA team?
Yeah, that let's see.
Meanwhile, how many followers did you just lose with your Rudy Gobert comments?
I don't know. People will be shocked to hear me say anything negative about him. That one in front was from @MustacheHater, the Ricky Rubio question.
I hate the stash is the Twitter handle. I'm fine with it.
So my answer to this question is, I always thought he was pretty underrated before this season. I understand, like, the complaints and the worries about his shot are 100% fair. Historically bad shooter. But he did everything else so well. His steal rate was so high. His assist rate was so high.
Should we harken back to the early season podcast where we both said his kind of hot shooting was for real?
I know.
If you're looking for a reason to abort the podcast now, that would be it.
But, man, this season he has been really, really bad.
Right.
Every time he has the ball, I'm afraid he's going to turn it over. Every time he shoots, I'm pretty sure he's going to miss. He's averaging I'm pretty sure he's under 5 assists a game, which just is like, that's crazy to think from Ricky Rubio. I think the argument for him playing is what he did in his past. But at this point, I've been saying for a while, it's time. And I said this earlier when we were talking about Donovan Mitchell, it's time to just go ahead and start him at the one. I don't think you can kill Rubio's trade value any more than he already has.
By averaging a career high 12.4 field goal attempts per 36 minutes. So here's my question, though, actually. So Rubio's posting the highest usage rate of his career, too, because it makes sense. He's finishing more plays than ever, like with shot attempts specifically, and his turnover rate is still kind of high. In this Quinn Snyder egalitarian offensive approach, did we kind of
overestimate? It's so bad for him.
Yeah, did we, overestimate how well he'd fit into that? Because George Hill is the better fit. Like, he's the guy who can play on or off the ball. Rubio has never been the guy that you can play on or off the ball.
I also thought Snyder would tailor things to him a little bit more. Right. Like, to try and pigeonhole him into like a catch and shoot option just seems crazy to me.
No, I totally. And I'm wondering if we just assume it was going to be an adjustment? Did we he shot kind of well from three towards the end of last season. So maybe I placed too much stock in that. But just looking at how the Jazz have run their offense, or basically since Snyder's come around, I don't know what. Is there anything that you saw, like, to this point that would have made you think, in a vacuum, that Ricky Rubio is a good fit?
Not from what I've seen this season.
No, but I mean, like, even leading in. Like, that's my – like, did we, well, did that's, we just completely it, whiff?
What I anticipated was some adjustment when he was on the floor. I thought they would kind of let him be himself when he was out there. And instead, they've tried – it feels like they've tried to force – their system onto him, which just obviously isn't working.
Yeah, and I mean, if you're not, you're absolutely positively right that they can't really kill his trade value more than they already have.
Yeah, at this point, it's time to try Mitchell and Hood as your backcourt.
So I guess neither of us have a trade for the Jazz, but there is a question about one that maybe this would be a good segue into. Where was it? What is your perfect trade for the Jazz?
Glenderson. GLENDERSEN, and it's what's your ideal Jazz trade?
And this is like a swing for the fences, and it depends upon whether you think that he is going to rebound at all anytime soon, because he's still the guy I'm about to talk about. He is under 30 years old. If you're the Jazz and the Hornets just wanted to get off money, are you looking at a Rubio and either, let's say, Joe Johnson or Rubio and Favors for Batum swap? Would you do it?
Rubio and Favors for Batum?
Or Rubio and Johnson.
He's been kind of underwhelming this season too, has he? I don't have him pulled up.
Batum is terrible. Batum has had a really bad season, but I'm just saying he seems
he is a better fit, that's for sure.
Right. But you owe him, including this season, it's like 4 years and $99.1 million. And his effective field goal rate is the lowest it's ever been for the second consecutive season. He's setting a new record low there.
And how old is he?
He is 28.
Man.
Oh, he's 29, excuse me. He turned 29 on December 14th. Happy birthday, Nick.
That's tough because I do think he's a better fit maybe than both of those guys.
And like even the Hornets,
Favors and Rubio, but
isn't necessarily a good fit, but they could actually – they need a backup playmaker because it's not Monk.
Yeah.
Michael Carter-Williams is awful. And I remember – I'd like to shout out to the person who listened to the podcast and was mad that we didn't give the Hornets a higher grade because we hadn't seen enough from Michael Carter-Williams yet.
Yeah.
Shame on them.
Yeah, that's played out in our favor. One of the few things that did.
Yeah, so, I mean, we're wrong all the time. I don't mean to call it the one person. I'm saying is that that's like – because
it's
you were talking about how the Jazz don't have assets. That's probably a type of deal you're looking at.
Yeah, that's probably true. As difficult as that may be to accept. I feel like I'd probably rather have Favors, but –
I'm saying, what if it's Ricky Rubio and Joe Johnson then? Like, if the Hornets...
Rubio and Johnson I would do. I'd do that in a heartbeat.
The Hornets, if they move Batum, would be with the sole goal of just getting off money. And you save, like, by taking on Rubio's deal for next year, you're taking on, I think, about... they could send the Jazz in this trade, too. You probably have to eat, like, Mike or Carter Williams in the deal. But, like, that's fine. Just do the two for two.
How long is his deal?
It's expiring. So it's even money.
Yeah, I'd do that.
And then you're saving about $10 million next year, and then you're off from a deal 2 years earlier. So
I don't mind that trade at all, honestly.
If I'm the Hornets, I'm just doing it from their perspective because I think there's still – Batum has that cachet because if he wanted, he could have signed a full max in 2016. That's like without question. So I name the Heat as a possible destination for him. I came up with a deal the other day if they wanted to get off money because the Heat seemed like a team to take that chance, and the Jazz are not typically the team. But if he wanted to make a trade – and this is – I'm not sure if it's skewed because you have a very large Jazz following, and I think my following is probably disproportionately from Utah too because you've retweeted me so much from over the years, and I love it. That's fine. But we get so many Jazz trade questions, and the Jazz never make these midseason moves.
Yeah, they really don't.
But that is – this.
But
is,
every
I think,
fan base is like dying for their team to do something.
Right. But if they were going to make a move, that's something I'd consider. I mean, you're into a lot of money then would be the only thing if you're Utah – but if you're not going to bring back Favors anyway, which you're probably not, I just – maybe it's justifiable.
Interesting to me for sure. All right, I'm going to jump to another question. This one's from Erlinger Einars, and hopefully I pronounced that one right too. At Erlinger Einars. Did you get all that?
Yeah, I got all that. Let me recite it back to you.
Can Denver contend with Jokic, Harris, Murray, and Millsap as their core? And I think this depends on what he means by contend. Compete for a title? Not right now. I think a lot of that depends on what does Jamal Murray become. And I think by the time he hits his ceiling, Paul Millsap's probably not even on this team anymore. So is Jokic like a title contending centerpiece at some point? I like to believe that he is, but even that is a couple years away, and I think you have to hit on Murray. I think Trey Lyles has to continue to be really good. Gary Harris has to continue to be good. I think a lot has to go right for them to be a legitimate title contender.
Yeah, if we're talking – I guess we're probably talking more so next year because Millsap's injured right now, wrist injury. But encouraging, when those four guys have been on the floor this year, 236 minutes, which is not insubstantial given that they've only been able to play in 14 games – 111.9 offensive rating, 100.4 defensive rating, plus 11.5 points per 100
really
possessions. True shooting around 58. That's pretty good. They have they're a pretty good offensive rebounding, defensive rebounding team too. Like they seem to have a nice combination of, you know, playmaking. Their assist percentage is through the roof. That's a very versatile core four. It would still seem if you're looking to, let's say, just on the Millsap contract, you would need. You're like a piece short, and that's what I keep saying about Denver is like who you need that wing, and it's not on the roster. It's not.
Yeah, that's why I think they need another star. So I'm saying like if Murray becomes a star, then it's interesting. I totally agree.
I still think, but my whole point is like, even if he does, you know, you have Gary Harris and Murray, neither of them are really, like, they're nice-sized guards, but neither of them are really
a winner. That, like, 6'7", 6'8", guy.
Yeah. You're not, and it's Wilson Chandler's not it. He's been kind of bad offensively, but his defense has been pretty good this year. Will Barton, I don't think
Trey Lyles has been awesome this year.
Is he a wing, though? He's like that.
I was going to say he's maybe a 3-4, maybe.
Yes, and that's like, really pushing it. Juan Hernan Gomez, I don't think is going to work at the 3. They can do some interesting things with, one, they're more set up, than better set up anyway, than anyone in the league, in my opinion, to make a blockbuster trade. I'm talking in terms of both assets and motivation, because you look at, you know, the Celtics have more assets, but they have no salary filler. The Lakers have more assets, but they don't want to compromise their flexibility. So the Nuggets, like, have that motivation. If there's a name that comes on the block that they want, or maybe you can go after, like, if you added Courtney Lee to that four-man, like, unit and made that, like, your five-man core moving forward, like, that's a, like, a nice mix. You get that extra defense, a nice mix of everything, and perhaps you can contend for a top-3 record in the West. I still think
he's another kind of undersized guy, though, if he's playing a wing.
That's really fair. Even if you went after Kent Bazemore, who's overpaid, so they seem like they need to, you know, they're not even playing Malik Beasley, basically. They've favored Torrey Craig. I would think even with that core, if even on the Millsap contract, if it hits its peak, we're probably still talking about a number 3 seed. And unless they hit on a wing in the draft, or they're able to sign someone in free agency, or they make a trade that we just don't see in the pipeline right now, the ideal fit for this team, like, if you could put Chris Middleton on the Nuggets, that would just be fantastic.
That would be really interesting.
Because the Bucks probably won't trade him. Yeah,
he's not going anywhere. That is interesting. Okay, I'm going to move on to R. Pravato, at R-P-R-A-V-A-T-O. Do you think it bothers Joel Embiid that he'll never be as good as Andre Drummond? And I wish I could play along with this question, but I'm going to go ahead and say Embiid's probably better now.
Yeah, it's just, even Drummond's been fantastic.
Drummond's been incredible, yeah.
The Pistons are just, they're better with him off the floor still. Like, that concerns me. I know, and I mean, you can break down the splits like however you want, but when you look and you see that they're a better, I forget by how much since I haven't looked it up in a couple days, but when he's on the floor, like, they're 2.5 points worse per 100 possessions on defense with him in the game. Their offense has been better, but they're a net wash, like, net rating-wise when he's on the floor. So it's just, like, we can say that last season it was even, like, a more pronounced difference. They were, their defensive rating when he was on the floor last year was, like, it was 108.9, and when he was off, it was 99.7. So you're talking about almost a 10-point differential there. That stuff just bothers me, and Embiid has already proved that he can statistically, granted over smaller sample sizes, and Drummond even said the thing about back-to-backs, Embiid is already having that macro impact on his team, and Drummond has yet to do that. So I don't even think this – to me, it's not even a conversation. If you want to talk about who's more durable, then yeah, but –
I will say that average ranks thing I did today, it has Drummond 13th so far this season and Embiid 29th, but I'm with you. I'm still
value over Embiid replacement right now. Loves Drummond, right? Is that
well loves him this season?
Yeah, so he's been good. I'm just saying.
Yeah,
like,
he's definitely been good. I think I agree. I think Embiid the better player right now. Joe Montgomery, I think he's come at us the last 2 or 3 mailbags. So thank you, Joe.
Yes, we appreciate your consistency, Joe.
At Joe, Montgomery. What's up with the Bulls' turnaround? They actually look like a competent team. And I think the answer on this one's pretty obvious.
Yeah, Chris Dunn's an MVP candidate.
He actually, you bring him up, he has been pretty good this year. But that's not who I was thinking.
There, I've been, you know, we could talk about their offense a little bit. But since Nikola Mirotic has come back, like, the defense has been, like, pretty good too. They're second in defensive rating over their last 11 games.
They're giving up fewer than 100 points per 100 possessions when he's on the floor, which is really good.
And he, like, you know, they've moved him to the bench now, I believe, and he only took, I think it was 4 shots in their win over the Knicks on Wednesday night. It's like a very weird role, but he's been so good. He's shooting the lights out from 3. But again, this has coincided. Dunn was already playing well, and the Bulls' offense is still, like, kind of worse with him on the floor. When you're looking at overall this season, over the last 11 games, though, I'm looking at it now, I'm sure that's different. No, it's not. Their offense has been much worse with Chris Dunn on the floor. But that's just, like, like it's coincided with you get better performances from Lauri Markkanen has been a little bit better, and like we said, Mirotić, and you also have David Nwaba. You've had Denzel Valentine.
Portis and Mirotić are somehow like amazing together too.
Yeah, that lineup has been. I think someone tweeted out the other day, aren't they like a plus 15 per 100
yeah,
or something crazy?
It's crazy.
So it's just. And they've beaten, like, some good teams. The Knicks aren't a good team. That was – I watched that game, and just the end of fourth quarter offense from both teams was brutal. But the Knicks can't set up a play out of bounds to save their lives. But the Bulls – they beat the Bucks twice, I believe, in this stretch. They, like – weren't they close with the Cavaliers in that game that they lost? Like, it's just – they're not beating.
Yeah, they've been good.
Is it just a matter of people not taking them seriously? I've been – they're beating, like, the Sixers. They're beating them. They've beat the Jazz. Like, they beat the Celtics. They're beating real teams. And they've capitalized on some of these teams twice. They came back for seconds with the Knicks and the Bucks. So it's – you know, they're ruining their tank. So this is kind of – as far as hot streaks go, this is pretty freezing cold when you look at their big picture aims, which yeah. is why I would expect – Joe Calley of the Sun-Times said that Mirotić is still open to waiving his no-trade clause and the Bulls will seriously look at moving him. Once his restriction lifts in January, and I would expect them to move him because he's not
they
your
should.
Future. He turns 27 soon, so
it's time to embrace the tank. That's for sure. I think you mentioned him as a possible. Like you've talked about him maybe in Portland, which I think is super interesting.
Yeah, Portland would be good. There, what was the? Oh, Washington. I thought would have been a.
Oh yeah, they would be interesting because Markieff Morris has not been great this year.
No, although Mike Scott has been. Absolutely.
He has been good. Yeah.
Absolutely fantastic. I don't know what that deal like is. You would have to get like if they were getting say if they got Satoransky and a first round pick in that deal, the Bulls.
Satoransky's my boy right now.
Would they be willing to take on Jan Mahinmi's contract if that's like the compensation that they're getting? That would have to be like that's the Washington Wizards' best way of really getting Mirotić unless they just firmly believe that giving up Markieff Morris as part of that deal would move the needle for them. So, but Portland would be interesting. So would Washington. I don't know if you get a first round pick for him on his own, though. He does have the team option for next year, but you know it's basically a year and a half of Mirotić. Is that worth a first round pick? And he's never really played like this before. He's not going to have the same freedom on another team. So I don't know. But he's going to be one of the names to watch as we move closer to February 8th.
All right. Our next one is from at Will Leitner. WILLLEIGHTNER. Why is Jason Kidd an NBA coach, and is Chris Middleton and Middleton All Star worthy? I think
Jason Kidd's a good networker, like that.
maybe. NBA experience seems to go a long way. I don't know. Did you catch his press conference the other night when somebody asked him? Why didn't Sean Kilpatrick get on the floor today? And he just goes, he wasn't in the lottery tonight.
I didn't see that, but that's...
He's getting like more and more curmudgeonly.
He was reportedly pissed media, that Gary Payton was ousted, though, I believe. And they mishandled. Payton was on the two-way contract, was he not? Like, they mishandled that.
I don't know. But the way, like, even the way he used Payton was so dumb. He would play him for like 10 minutes a game, and he would start him and play him for 10 minutes. Like, I'll never understand ceremonial starters, and he might be the king of that.
Well, but that's the other thing is like you get to a point.
Maybe Giannis is close to him. I don't know.
I don't know, but it's just the Bucks have just done so many weird things, and Gary Payton is one of them because you get to like he got to the like the shit or get off the pot point of his two-way contract, and they basically had to get rid of him because they used him so much already. And so a lot of decisions they've made as a team just don't make a ton of sense. I honestly don't know. I don't know that you could say, oh, he definitely needs to be fired right now. Like, do midseason coaches changes really ever make this huge difference? It seems like it sparks something within a team maybe immediately because of the urgency. But you can't overhaul how the Bucks play in the middle of the season. It's just not
especially
possible.
When they're on track to make the playoffs. And
although them being the seventh seed right now is super disappointing. On the flip side, you don't have Parker. You know, your bench isn't the greatest. So Jason Kidd's not a good NBA coach. I think we could agree on that. David Fizdale in Milwaukee would be a hell of a fit.
That would be
is all I'll say.
Yeah. Chris Middleton, all-star worthy. He's averaging 21 points, 5 rebounds, almost 5 assists, a steal, shooting 46% from the field, 36% from 3. It's a crowded field. in the East. I think it's more crowded than I thought it would be this season. I think the East's generally better than I thought it'd be this season, but he certainly has an argument, I would say.
I would think he does. It's just, it's like a matter of who are you ousting?
I wouldn't bet on it, but.
Yeah. So it's like, who are you kind of ousting from the, who are you ousting from the Eastern Conference that you're going to make it? I think he could. I think it's possible. I don't know that his cold start to the year probably hurts him a little bit.
Yeah.
But it's like, who are you? You know, you're not going to look at like all the guys from the East who definitely need to get in. And we're talking like front court, Al Horford, Giannis Antetokounmpo. You have DeMar DeRozan qualified as a small forward for cleaning the glaps. You have Drummond. You have Embiid. Kristaps Porzingis.
It's going to be hard. Yeah.
So it's going to be tough, but it wouldn't be like egregious if the coaches picked him to get in. And he's been better defensively than I feel like his numbers say. That's one of those players. I swear by numbers, but I watch him, and when you see like his DBPM is not great, and then you see, but like you watch him, and I'm just convinced that he's still a good defender.
Same here. At BGROENEWEGEN. Sorry, I'm not even going to try. Groenewegen. So I did try. How excited can I be about OG, meaning OG Anunoby? And I'm very.
Yeah, that's the exact word I was going to
I don't know.
Use.
What do you think?
I think very. He's perfect for the
he
role.
He doesn't
that
have
they
to. He's a, go ahead.
He's just perfect for the
yeah,
role.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's like Tatum. He doesn't have to do a ton, but having a rookie who makes your team like demonstratively better is pretty rare.
He does more defensively than Tatum does, and he's just reliant on the field offensively. You know, we're talking about, I think, almost 90% or more, more than 90% of his looks come inside 3 feet or from beyond the arc. That's just...
That's perfect.
Yeah, the question would be, will he shoot 42.6% from three for his career? No one pegged him as a shooter coming in. He was at 31.1% his final season at Indiana, although he did shoot 44.8% as a freshman there. Limited attempts, though. He attempted 74 three-pointers during his entire college career. And he's, if I'm not mistaken, he's on pace to make more than that this season. He's already made 43, and he's attempted 101. So that would be a question, but he's good defensively. He can do some off-the-dribble stuff when you need him to, but he'll never be that like featured option thing. And the other thing I'll say, his free-throw percentage makes me nervous. Like,
what is that right now? I'm not even sure.
63%, and he was at 52.2 in college. How is this guy shooting?
Yeah, that's a little worrisome.
Such a
sure.
high clip from three, having an effective field goal percentage above 60 when he's that poor of a foul shooter. I don't know. There are questions, but I think you could justifiably be excited because he's having an impact now.
And the physical stuff with him, he seems like one of those perfect sort of could play 2, 3, 4. Minutes.
I was shocked that he was ready to begin the season. So, like, that was a good harbinger from the jump.
The only other thing I'll add about OG is when he's on the floor, Toronto's outscoring opponents by 15.9 points per 100 possessions. When he's off the floor, they're outscoring opponents by 1.2. And I believe that's the biggest swing of any Raptors player.
He stabilized the defense of a starting unit that's just weird defensively. DeMar DeRozan seems like he's been a little bit better, but I'm not a fan of the Ibaka Valanciunas front court on defense. So he's been good.
Awesome.
Yeah. I don't know. He'll never be a star, but you can be, he could be that really high end glue guy. And to say that about a rookie who's already contributing to a quasi contender, that's a big deal.
All right. Our next one's from @Shay_Pearson, @Shay_Pearson. How's the sixth man of the year race shaping up? I'm the guy I would pick, and I don't think he has a prayer of winning it. is David West. And the reason I don't think he has a prayer is because he only plays 13 minutes a game. But his numbers for the last really 3 years, even going back to that one season in San Antonio, they have just blown me away. This season alone, he's averaging 18 points, 9 rebounds, 5 assists, 3 blocks, and 2 steals per 36 minutes, shooting 62% from the field. Those numbers are crazy. And now, give me 1 second. He is third on the Warriors in box plus minus right now. Stephen Curry, Jordan Bell, and David West. So that's my pick at the moment. I don't obviously Sixth Man of the Year almost always goes to like the flashiest scorer coming off the bench, and that's at the moment, I don't know, Lou Williams. So my pick, he's not going to get it, but that's who I'd go with.
I get 13.1 minutes per game is just nothing
it's
to me.
Almost nothing.
On the Warriors, yeah. Especially. Lou Williams, I think, is like,
he has been awesome, yeah, too. I shouldn't have, like, undersold his case.
He's been great. Will Barton, too. Eric Gordon,
that's a good one.
I still really like, but he's started a lot because
I think
of the
he's
Chris
probably
Paul
started
game.
More than he's
but
come
if
up
we
the
can
bench.
Assume that Chris Paul is.
Yeah, if Chris Paul comes back.
Yeah,
you're
so,
right.
I mean, he started half his game so far to this point, but he's been. He's shooting just 35.1% from 3-point range, but he's been fantastic just as like someone who draws the defense away. He's shooting inside 3 feet. He's shooting 64.8%, which is his highest mark since 2011-2012. He's just playing smarter basketball. He seems like he's been a better defender too. So I think those three guys are probably the ones. I know some people will mention Jordan Clarkson. Tyreek Evans would belong in there, but he's been
starting lately.
Yeah,
too. So, but yeah, he should be in there if he goes back to the bench.
So, but those three are the ones I zero in on, and if you want to, maybe four, but I think as of now, you probably have to eliminate Gordon and Evans just because they've started about half their games. Evans has been on the bench a little bit more than Gordon, but he's been the starter for, I think it's like 15 games in a row or something like that. So 14 games. It's just, I would immediately gravitate towards, if we're looking at volume, would be the Barton and the Lou Williams at this point. But either one of Gordon or Evans could enter it. And West is interesting if you're going with like a low burst candidate.
All right. At Ralph Mason Jr., Ralph_MASONJR. It's still early, but how does your top five redraft look from the 17 draft? I'm going to go, the first two are a toss-up to me, and this goes back to our earlier question, Tatum or Mitchell, but I'm going to say Tatum 1, Mitchell 2, John Collins 3, Kyle Kuzma 4, Jordan Bell 5.
Wow, you didn't have OG Anunoby in your top 5.
I also didn't have Markelle Fultz.
Well, that's Markelle Fultz hasn't played,
yeah,
really.
But, I mean, there's still got to be some people out there that would put him in the top 5, right?
I guess based off, like, swing for the fences thing, but some of the other rookies have just been so good.
Yeah, I agree.
I think I agree with you on Tatum. You had Mitchell too, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'd have Mitchell too.
I had Collins third. I think he's been awesome.
I probably have Anunoby 3.
Oh.
And then Collins and Bell seem like a nice way to round it out, I guess.
Lakers fans, get at him.
Kyle Kuzma, yeah. I'd go Kyle Kuzma 4, Bell 5. I love John Collins, but.
All right, that's fine with me. Okay, we're going to have to maybe pick up the pace a little bit on the rest of these. At AERYTHOD, I'll say Arythod. Who is the best point guard in the East right now, Simmons and James excluded? I'll let you start with this one.
It's kind of like it's basically a two-man race, right? It's just between Kyrie Irving or Kyle Lowry. Maybe it's Kemba, but hasn't been shooting too well of late.
Yeah, I'd say it's between those two.
I'd probably go, oh man, I want to pick Kyle Lowry, but I feel like Kyrie Irving's body of work has been just more impressive over the longer haul. He's cooled off in the clutch. The Celtics are going through this like cold stretch. It's so hard for me to pick between them. I want to pick Kyle Lowry.
I'm going to go with Kyrie, so maybe you want to balance me out.
No, I think I have to just go with Kyrie because he's been absurd mostly offensively.
Yeah, I
if
agree.
You're going to get even an iota of defense out of him, that's a big deal.
And for the first, I don't know, 15, 20 games, he was like
shooting
almost
a zillion percent
pretty good
time.
Defensively.
Yeah.
And that too, yeah. So I went with Kyrie there too. I think a lot of people would probably still put John Wall in the conversation, but he just has been a little bit off this season. I don't know if it's the knee or what, but he's just not quite himself.
I think that contributes it to it. The Wizards' shot profile has also been horrid compared to last year, too.
They got to figure that out.
Speaking of Kyrie, though,
go ahead.
Cutler Harris at CutHarris13. Would the Celtics be having this much success if healthy IT traded places with Kyrie?
I So my initial reaction to this question was yes, because I think I don't think I know Isaiah was a little bit better offensively last year than Kyrie's been so far this year. But I do think even like just getting to maybe neutral defensively as Kyrie has been a game changer for the Celtics. So I would say probably a little bit better with Kyrie. Though what Isaiah did last year was insane offensively. I just think the slight step up defensively with the size and what he can do probably increases this team's ceiling.
It'd be pretty close, but yeah, I agree with you.
Okay, now we're at Two Saint Takes. Number two, SAINTTAKES. How many guys in this next draft would have gone number one overall in 2017? Go ahead.
The popular number has been four, right? Like before Michael
Doncic,
Porter,
Jayson Bagley, and Porter. Yeah,
before he got injured. I guess now it would be three.
But this draft class, 17, has been better than I think anybody expected.
Right. I mean, how many of those guys are you taking over Tatum, knowing what you're? Of course, Fultz, the actual number one overall pick, it doesn't look great right now. But how many of those guys are you taking over Tatum?
Yeah, somebody who's proven
would you
a
take,
lot.
Well, let's do it this way. Would you take Doncic over Tatum?
So Doncic is the one that I'm like pretty sure I would take number one overall in 2017. So I think I'm going to go Doncic. And I was going to say, I prefaced this question by saying I don't really dive into the draft until
Sam's,
I don't know, May. So it's still,
although
a ways
I
off
feel like you're
me.
As qualified as anyone to talk about Doncic.
I have watched a lot of that guy. I will admit I have not seen much of DeAndre Ayton, who I've heard a lot of great things about.
Yeah,
I haven't seen a ton of Marvin Bagley.
Was
go ahead.
Horn. Yeah, I've heard Ayton has been, people are in love with him.
Yeah. Just from the very little I know, I think Doncic and Ayton probably have the best argument. I think Bagley's probably next. And then Michael Porter, unfortunately, with the back is, I think he's out of this question.
Because
like you said, we've already seen so much from guys like Tatum and Mitchell that I don't think we were expecting to see. So Doncic is the only one I'd be sure about. At NikeMan14, he spells it N1KEMan14. How does Alec Burks numbers compare when Rubio is on the floor versus off the floor?
I know you got so, these.
Yeah. So with Rubio on, he's averaging 16.6 points per 36 with a 50.8 true shooting. And with Rubio off, he's averaging 18.5 points per 36 with a 54.8 true shooting. So it's not like a monumental difference, but he's certainly been better. I don't know if you saw the player impact chart I put out on Rubio a few days ago. He was actually like the first person I ever did those for, and that was a couple years ago. And everyone's net rating on the Timberwolves went up like substantially when they played with Ricky Rubio. This season, the only player whose net rating does not go down when they play with Rubio is Jonas Jerebko. He hurts literally everyone else on the Jazz. It's just, like we said earlier, it's just the fit is not working. Okay, I'm going to give this one to you. At Miltown_CP, MILTOWN_CP, where do you rank Giannis right now?
That's a good question. I mean, he's top five. I don't know where you put him in the top five. If we're looking at just this season, I'd probably say my top five are LeBron, Harden, Steph, then Giannis, then KD. So fourth.
I think I'd probably be about the same. If you're only looking at like this part of this season, I think he has an argument for third just because of how many games Curry's missed.
Yep.
But if I'm just saying like who are the best players, I think I would have.
Yeah,
that
where is he
going to
end up? I think he'll fourth. I mean, he's definitely top five. That's not even a question.
Yeah, I'm there. At K Tremogli. KIE_TREMOGLIE. Ben Simmons or Joel Embiid?
Long term, for me, it has to be Simmons. I don't like that he doesn't really have a jump shot, but he's going to, one, have the ball in his hands more as the basically, I mean, they're playing him at point guard, giving him this additional ability to impact the offense a little bit more. He should eventually be more switchy on defense. We're already kind of seeing what he could do with his long arms, even though he's out of position a lot. His finishing at the rim has been pretty good, and the frequency with which he reaches it basically on command, even though defenses don't have to respect a jumper, that's incredible. Has a nice polished post game. already. Right now it's Embiid, and you can look at the numbers and just Simmons hasn't really been able to – the Sixers don't play well when it's just him and not Embiid. You give him Redick or Covington, though, and they can kind of play teams to a stalemate. So, again, over the long haul, I think I would pretty clearly pick Simmons. But right now, Embiid is definitely better. And I say this knowing that Simmons has cooled off offensively over the past couple weeks.
I think it's Simmons for me, too. I love elite passers. I think Joel Embiid has mostly put the health questions to bed, although he's missed a bunch of games with a back. So I think that has to be...
Yeah, knock on something for least, saying that. We're not even halfway through yet.
Got it. It's at least part of the equation, but I agree with everything you said. I think long-term, I mean, he's a 6'10 point guard, possibly like the 6'10
like actual point
it's
guard,
crazy.
Too. Like, that's what he's playing.
It's insane. So, yeah, I'm with you. Embiid right now, Simmons long-term. Have the Wizards played a lineup of Beal, Porter, Oubre, and Mike Scott? Which I think we actually asked that question ourselves in the last episode.
Great.
At MattV5, M-A-T-T-V-5, and I looked it up right before the podcast. They've played 2 minutes together.
That doesn't seem enough.
Yeah. On a side note, like, their starting lineup with Mike Scott instead of Markieff Morris has been, like, way better than it is with Markieff Morris. Mike Scott's been good this year.
Even though the lineup where you had Kelly Oubre instead of Markieff Morris, that's been absolute flames compared to what Morris is doing.
Yeah. I don't know what's up with him, but something appears to be off.
Mirotić, baby.
Yeah. At LanRover0, LanRover0, will the Jazz ever figure things out, or will they maintain their defeatist mentality given the injuries and schedule?
Wow. After asking that question after what they did over the previous 2 years is like, that's kind of an asshole move.
Yeah, I don't know about defeatist question. One thing that I've always thought is like a hallmark of the Quinn Snyder era is like, regardless of talent, they seem to play pretty hard, and they have gotten blown out a lot lately, but, I think with all the injuries, it's fair. In answer to the question, I don't think they're going to be – the more I watch them, it's hard to see them making the playoffs. Even if Gobert's back, I just think there's too many issues with the Rubio fit, and the guy you rely on more than anything is a rookie. And OKC's been better. So figure things out. Maybe they'll be better than they are right now, but I don't think they're a playoff team anymore.
I mean, I'm completely with you right there. They should fire up the Doncic button.
Yeah. It might be too late for them to get into that sweepstakes, but I'm with you. At Jason Dardick, JASONDARDICK, which upcoming free agent do you think the Mavericks should target?
You had a good one before the podcast, and I really think it's when you're looking at impactful free agents, it's probably the only one I'd put on my list.
Yeah, Dallas is... They've done a lot of swinging for the fences in free agency, and I actually like that they're trying to build a more traditional way for the first time in seems like forever. But if you could end up with like a 4-5 combo of Harrison Barnes and DeMarcus Cousins, that'd be pretty interesting to me.
They're in an enviable spot because they're not going to have max contract space when they go into the offseason, but they could probably get it pretty easily if they need it, which is a nice, comfortable spot. You could find a taker for Wesley Matthews. Maybe
Barea might have played himself into like a trade too, value.
So, but if they want, like, DeMarcus Cousins is probably the limit because you don't want to invest in anyone too old for this rebuild. Like, you want to focus on the guys who are going to get, you know, not only be worth their entire 4-year contract that you give them, but maybe be good into a next one. As well, DeMarcus Cousins fits that bill, but a lot of people have, like, jokingly mentioned DeAndre Jordan, and it's just like you don't want someone who's about to turn 30.
That ship has sailed.
Yeah.
Where does Jordan Clarkson get traded?
So
this is at Mr. Marshall 254.
I came up with a trade that got surprisingly negative reaction, and I was okay with it. Jordan Clarkson to the Hawks for Marco Bellinelli and Dwayne Dedman, who is injured right now.
Which you told me that before we started recording. I kind of like that, too.
Yeah, I mean, the Lakers, they kind of, with Brook Lopez injured, they could use, like, another center. We know they talked about the Randall-Noel slop at one point. Dedman, when he's healthy, is a more disciplined defender than Noel. He's showing some three-point range. If he opts into the last year of his deal next year, you could kind of work around that $6.3 million, or you could trade him away really easily. There are teams that would want him at that price point. And Marco Bellinelli just helps the worst three-point shooting team in the league right now. The Lakers want to win games, and Jordan Clarkson's an okay shooter this season. He's not great. Marco Bellinelli's hitting more than 38% of his three-point attempts, and he's expiring. That would be something. And for the Hawks, you know, yes, you're taking on Jordan Clarkson's money, but that money doesn't look so bad this season. You can use another playmaker so that your second-best passer isn't Kent Bazemore. You can bring him off the bench behind Schroeder. I don't know if you want to pay the final 2 years, and I think it's $25.9 million left on his deal. I get it, but he's 25. Like, that's not a bad flyer to take when you're the Hawks.
Yeah, I actually, like I said, I kind of like that deal. I don't really, I'd have to look deeper. So my apologies to Mr. Marshall. Maybe I'll give you more on Twitter.
Ooh, can I ask this one?
Yeah, go ahead.
This one comes from at Beef B-Ball, at Beef
B-Ball. Ooh, I don't have this one.
Does Evan Turner have any trade value?
No.
Yeah, I was I almost would have laughed. I read it. Evan Turner's last seven games, though, in case you're looking for some fun: 59.1% shooting, 66.7% 3-point shooting on less than seven attempts.
Wow.
3.4 rebounds, 2.4 assists. Still a negative 6.7 plus minus on average. So no, he does not have any trade value.
At Alaric, Alaric 1224. How long before you think the league expands to 32 teams? I think there's enough talent now to handle 32 teams. I think aligning divisions would be better with 32. You could have 8-4 team divisions like you have in the NFL. I think they've kind of rebuffed the expansion questions as they've come up over the last couple of years, but I think they could handle it right away.
Yeah, I'm totally with you there. I would love to see basketball back in Seattle, and they can put the
Seattle definitely needs one. And then I think there's a bunch of options for the 32nd team.
Right. I mean, and you could even technically just have three expansion teams, because a lot of people think that the NBA should move out of Memphis or New Orleans. I love the fans of both New Orleans or Memphis, but they are not big markets. Oh, I want to ask this one because it's directed at Andy from Jeremiah at basketball season. That's at basketball SZN. Do you still practice?
No, this goes back. that question when I said I've basically been on like a non healthy binge for 2 years. That's part of me not practicing basketball.
All right.
at Bones McKinney, Bones_MCKINNEY. What's your best possible 5-man team from current players? I'm going Curry, Harden, LeBron, Antetokounmpo, and Jokic. Just imagine Jokic dropping dimes to those guys, like cutting all over the floor.
I'm going Curry. Oh, wow. I'm going to go Curry, Durant, LeBron, Kawhi Leonard, and Anthony Davis.
Ooh, cool. I kind of maybe overlooked Kawhi because he hasn't played.
Yeah, you're a terrible person. I get the that's Jokic drop in there, though. But
if Giannis at my five and LeBron at the four and Kawhi at the three, that's obviously really good, too.
I love Giannis. I just want him to shoot.
Yeah. Okay, last one. I think this one's directed at me, too. At Frankie Smokes 11, do you still think Jokic is better than Cousins? And then he's got a crying, laughing emoji, and then like the hand palm or the face palm emoji. And I'm going to say yes. DeMarcus Cousins has insane box score numbers, obviously, but I think beyond the box score, Nikola Jokic helps you win a little bit more than Cousins does. And maybe it's sounding more and more crazy to say that, but I'm still there for now.
And you know, Cousins, he was defending really well at the beginning of the year, and it seems like he's checked out there. Jokic is not as bad as everyone thinks, but Cousins actually seems like he has the potential to be a dominant defender, and is just, I don't want to call it, just maybe part of it. Defense is hard in the NBA, so maybe he's just not grasping everything, but I would still say Jokic too. And he's younger.
Here's the one thing
I'll
say about Jokic's defense too. Denver's defense has been better with him on the floor for each of the three seasons he's been on the league, and he has a really good steal rate for a big guy. So
yeah, so he's long. He's deceptively long.
And he's got really quick hands.
We do have another one from Swaggy Porter Jr. at Swaggy Porter. How far is the three-point line? Not really an open-ended question. It's like 23. We could Google this. It's like 23.75 feet
I'm cheating.
So it's just under 24. 23.75 is my guess.
You're right.
I win.
I think it's definitely shorter in the corners, though.
Yeah.
And I don't know what that is. But you were right on the 3.75.
Another one just came in. Will there be another blockbuster trade this season? I'm going to say yes against my gut just because it feels like
there's been craziness.
Yeah, but there's already been so much player movement, it wouldn't surprise me if there wasn't.
I think it's 22 in the corners in the NBA, which is that's a pretty significant difference, 2 feet.
That's why
I think that wraps us up.
Yeah, we got some through some stuff.
Yes, we did. Thank you so much, everybody, for the questions. If you want to interact with us about our answers or anything else, you can find Dan at Dan Favalli, F-A-V-A-L-E. I'm at Andrew D. Bailey. The show's at Hardwood Knox. The sponsor is at NBA_math. Like Dan said at the beginning, we obviously really appreciate ratings, reviews, subscriptions, telling your friends about it. If you didn't commandeer people's phones at Christmas, there's still time to do that. Anytime you're with somebody, honestly, is a time to steal their phone and subscribe to this podcast. until next time, we leave you with the shout out to Bino Udrih and Kyle Anderson.